This is the John Clayton Show
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in on the conversation at 866-979-ESPN. Now, here's your host,
the professor,
John Clayton.
And Dave Crosby joining us at the bottom of the hour. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, I got a couple questions here. Lately, I've been hearing with Julian Edelman retiring, a couple other people have been saying if he should be eligible for the Hall of Fame or not. And with a backlog of so many good wide receivers, do you think he qualifies more than Sterling Sharp?
What receiver are you talking about?
Edelman, who just retired.
No. Sharp would be ahead of him. Because, I mean, think about this. It's like, okay, I know that sometimes this gets overrated, but if you go through your entire career and you're not selected to the Pro Bowl, does that mean you should go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Because you're on a playoff team with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and all that stuff. I mean, his thing is doing so well in the playoffs because I think he's got more catches in the playoffs because he's played more playoffs and Super Bowls than any other receiver. But I mean, he did not make the Hall of Fame. I mean, he didn't make the Pro Pro Bowl. Nobody. I mean, players, coaches, GMs never gave him enough respect or gave him enough votes to get him into the Pro Bowl. How can you go into the Hall of Fame and you've never been to the Pro Bowl? I don't see it.
Yeah, no, I didn't agree with it either. I don't think he deserves to be in the Pro Bowl, or to the Hall of Fame. But what people were saying was, that Sterling Sharp deserves to go, which maybe I possibly agree. They're comparing him that if he would have stayed healthy and had his career with Brett Favre, that he could have possibly had the numbers close to Rice or even better. Do you agree?
Yeah, but that's the thing. He didn't. I mean, so that's why he's out. I mean, his brother's in. Shannon Sharp's in, and deservedly so. I know it's a different position, tight end, but it's like, it's a high standard for wide receivers. And that's why, for example, I still remember that one stretch with Art Monk and Andre Reed. You know, we had five receivers taking votes away from each other, and it was taking him forever to get in. It took like 7-8 years for Monk to get in. It took 7 years for Andre Reed to get in. But that's the thing. It's like, if you have a backlog of receivers and, we're almost at that stage, we're going to have another backlog coming up, it's tough.
No, I don't agree that Sterling Sharp should be in the in the Hall of Fame either. What the argument was everyone was saying, well, if Terrell Davis is in, because his short career, even though he only had four productive years, he's in, then these other people should get in. But
it took 13 years.
Yeah. Oh, but also the type of records Terrell Davis set, not records, but his performance in the Pro Bowl, in the Super Bowl, and in the playoffs separated him from people like Julian Edelman or other people who had short careers that are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, remember, it's like he became the standard. Because remember when they were doing the Herschel Walker? No, they were trying to do a deal in New Orleans, and they used the number 6,400 yards that he gained in 4 years, and that was going to be what was going to set him up for the big contract. It's like, if you can get 6,400 in 4 years, then you're going to get this, and this. And so, it's 4 years, but it took him forever. Because remember, he started as a fullback, and then he didn't start. And then, of course, then he became the running back. But again, the success and the fact that what he did win on two Super Bowl winning teams, that kind of gave him an edge. But it was always tough because I know from sitting there for the 13 years he was waiting that there wasn't a unanimous type of move to get him in. I mean, they were trying, and then finally, if you hit the right year, you can get in. But he was borderline.
Yeah, and especially if you're a Super Bowl MVP and a regular season MVP, that throws a little extra more weight too.
Yes, no question about it. But yeah, but Edelman, there's no way he should get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it's nothing personal. I mean, he was a very good receiver. But again, this is the Hall of Fame is not the Hall of Very Good. It's the Hall of Greats. It's the Hall of Fame. And so if you can't make the Pro Bowl with the players voting and everybody else, then how do you expect to make the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. And talking about the Hall of Fame, I got a question with the players where they didn't really keep stats as much. Like a Randy Gradishar and people of that era, how do you guys judge on if they should be in the Hall of Fame, especially for people that don't know the players?
Yeah,
the
I youngers. Mean, you know, like Gratishar has always been somebody that's constantly brought up, and wisely so, because he did such a good job on so many good Denver Bronco teams. But it's just that he hasn't been able to get over the top. And again, what happens a lot of times, you know, here's Gratishar coming in there, and then you have maybe a year where you have three first-round Hall of Famers. You know, first ballot Hall of Famers, and that takes away the chances of a good Hall of Famer to get in there. But there's always that push to get him in because, again, he's Hall of Fame worthy. There's no question about it.
How do you argue for numbers since they don't have his sack numbers or his tackle numbers? What do you say? Oh, we watched him play. He was a strong defenseman, and there's nothing to back it up, though.
No, you're right. But again, it's like that's where, you know, hopefully people like myself that go back long enough to have seen him play keep on talking in his behalf that maybe he does deserve to get in. And so I know that Jeff Legwald, for example, he's been there as long as I have. Not as long as I have. He's been there a little bit less. But, you know, Jet Leggy is one for ESPN.com that covers the Broncos, that he's always making that push because he always uses the thing. It's like, how come the Broncos are always short-sighted? Because he feels that they are.
I agree, too. I don't think there's enough representation, but I'm a homer, so I guess it doesn't matter. Any series coming up, John?
Nope, nothing right now. Nothing on the schedule because, you know, Chris Miller's still being, you know, Brett Favre. He's always there every day.
Yeah.
Hey, here's the question now. So, and by the way, have you liked the stuff for, 104.3?
That's what I was going to hit on next. I love going to those spots. I'm getting a little sour of Stokely and the other guys because Bynes, because they're always negative and it's just too much, but I love turning in hearing your information you got with their questions. And then, cause especially with they were picking apart the Gordon's interview yesterday, the running back, Melvin Gordon's interview, saying that this was his worst year because he was coming in with a COVID offseason and everyone liked Phil Lindsay. He wasn't complaining as much as he was explaining what was going on, and then they were giving him a hard time, saying he was overpaid. But at the time, with Denver having these losing seasons, and having Philip Lindsay there, you kind of had to overpay Melvin Gordon to get him in.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's a 2 years, $16 million, I don't think is an overpayment for a guy that's been to two Pro Bowls.
Yeah, they were focusing a lot on him not getting 1,000 yards in a lot of his seasons.
Well, didn't he miss a game? He had 985.
Oh, no, he missed a game from what they were talking about in his previous years. I think he's going to be a good back this year. How old is he?
I think, 29?
Okay, so yeah.
By the way, what should the Broncos do at number 9?
If they're not able to trade back, if Parsons is there, or I'm really liking that second tackle, Slater.
Yeah.
Because he could be a right tackle, and I don't think Jerron James is going to be there long after this year, even if he's healthy, to stick through. And that'll shore up the offensive line because it's starting to gel. And if Locke's going to be the answer, I don't want him to go for another quarterback, but if Locke's going to be the answer, and he has two bookend tackles that'll keep him upright where he's not pitter-pattering his feet and he's able to learn his steps and not panic, because that's where he gets into trouble and he starts throwing behind the receivers. He's not throwing to the open spot, and he's opening up his arm and his delivery.
Mm-hmm,
so he's sailing the high. So, yeah, they need to get offensive linemen. If not, sure up the cornerback's position, because I know we got some good players in there now, but they're all one-year deals.
Well, I mean, it's 3 years on Ronald Darby. Yeah, but I mean, Callahan's on his last year, and there was 1 year on Kyle Fuller. But I mean, the only problem is, it's like I think you can justify taking a cornerback if you trade down to 15 with New England, but to take one at 9 and not have him play the first year, I question that.
Oh, yeah, no, that best thing would be to trade back first and then hopefully stockpile picks.
Yeah, because, again, it's like you trade back. I mean, you can probably get the third best cornerback in the draft at 15, particularly if you can get some good value from the New England Patriots, because, I mean, you can trade back and because you figure Patrick Surtain is going to go number 10. J.C. Horn could go number 12. And then, you know, you can still be in a position to get maybe the third best cornerback. And, you know, if that's going to be the case, but you can also get you can still even get a good offensive tackle at 15.
Yeah. Do you think Farley, when he slides down, when will they get the final say-so on what his back injury is like? Is that after someone drafts him, or is it?
I think it's going to knock him out of the first round. I mean, he may go down all the way to Tennessee or something like that.
Oh, that'd be a good steal to pick him up in the second round if he has a good 5 or 6 years without an injury. Hey, John, you have a great weekend, bud. Take care.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN. 206-421-ESPN. You can also text us. Text us at 710-710. And from the 206, are there any teams so cap-strapped they can't afford to sign a first-round pick? No. I mean, you'll find, you know, because if they are, they can just restructure a contract, you know, do a replacement deal. Like about, there's like 60 or 70 guys that have done that so far. And so you can always free up enough cap room to get your draft choices signed. And they have to do that because you can't go over the cap. From the 360, says, dear prof, professor, how much will Sheldon Richardson cost? I think he'd be a good fit if they can get him at the right price. I'm thinking right now the most he's going to be able to get is $5 million, and I don't know if Seattle is willing to go $5 million. I mean, if they're willing to, you know, you have a choice if you want, if they want to add another defensive tackle. And again, you know, you have two guys right now with starting experience that can come in. Richardson turned down the offer, whatever it was, for a lesser salary in Cleveland, and decided that you know, he'll get cut. And so then you know, in the case of Maurice Hurst, who was making 2.183, you know, he gets cut, and my guess is you can probably get him for 920. Are you better served to get Hurst, who did start and have some pass rush ability, or the better defensive tackle in Sheldon Richardson at $5 million or so? So we'll see where that goes. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show, 710-ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710-ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Your thoughts as far as what the Seahawks should do in the second and fourth rounds. Should they trade down and get a few extra picks? As we just heard, it's like Seahawks have never had fewer than eight draft choices in a John Snyder draft. And so right now they have three. And they have a seventh rounder and all that, along with a second and a four. And you'd like to be able to pick up some more. And but again, if you're having a draft where you have a little bit less, this draft is the one to do it, because again, I mean, you can see how weak it is on defense. And so, like, if you needed a defensive tackle, it's going to be tough. If you needed a tight end, it was going to be tough. If you needed a safety, it was going to be tough. Linebacker's not great, but interior guards are weak, and it's not necessarily great at center. So you take all that into account, and you realize, hey, this is going to be very difficult to you know, get that. And that's why you'll see teams trading out of this year's draft and going into next year's draft, because, you know, it's like you get to a certain point. And I know that some scouts have said that once you get maybe into the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds, I mean, you're going to have guys basically with undraftable grades being available. And it's like, do you take that sixth round pick and put it on them? 866-979-ESPN. 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. And, of course, you can text us at 710-710 from the 206. John, what's the status of Antonio Brown? Unsigned. He's not close to doing anything with Tampa Bay. I would hope, just from the personal standpoint, that he's not close to doing anything here. You know, Russell Wilson's going to push for it. But, you know, you would still think that, you know, Seattle, for that third receiver challenge, you know, they'd like to get somebody that is a little bit taller, to kind of fit the mode, because again, they have Freddie Swain, they have John Ursua, but they're shorter type slot guys. And so you kind of wonder, is like, what I think I worry about with Antonio is that how is he going to cause more problems than he was worth? And of course, he did a decent job, not a great job, with you know, Tampa Bay. You know, Tom Brady had him under total control. It's not like Russell Wilson's going to have, like Tom Brady did, Antonio Brown live at their house with Sierra. That's not happening. But still, I'd shy away from him, because I think he's had too many problems and could be more of a problem than anything else. But he's still under consideration here in Seattle. From the 425, John, what would the Seahawks look like this year and next if they traded their picks and only signed undrafted players? That would be bad, because number one, you're not getting any potential starters for the future. The undrafted class is probably going to be one of the weakest we've ever seen in the NFL this year. It was weak last year. It's going to be weaker this year, because again, you had so many players go back to college for an extra year. And so that takes away from the talent base. And that's why, again, you're going to see, I think, a whole bunch of teams wanting to trade out of this year's draft and go to next year's draft. But if you just rely on undrafted players, you're not going to get anything. I mean, you're actually setting the team back if you do that. You're better to get something out of this year's draft if you can. From the 206, hey, how great was the Mariners game last night? fantastic. I mean, right now they're 9-5. They show a good gutsy type of performance with their ability to come back, you know, be able to stay in these games. And of course, you know, finally beating an Astro team that's been dominating them for the last several years. That was good. We'll see how the series continues, but a good start and a good start to the whole season. From the 858, Todd Gurley is still out there. Any chance he comes to Seattle? I don't see it. I don't see any reason why that, you know, Gurley has that arthritic knee and you want to bring him in. You have to probably pay him $2 or $3 million. I don't think that would be really worth it. But, you know, one thing I guess would be in his favor is the fact that, you know, now that they're going to the Rams offense, that, you know, he could come in here and do it. But again, does Gurley really want to come to a team where technically he's going to be coming in as the number three running back? I don't see that happening. Again, you can text us on the Vizzy, you can text us on the text line at 710-710 from the 425. Do you think that Josh Gordon can return for the minimum? He can if he can get cleared by the National Football League because he's still technically under suspension. That's why he went into the other league to just try to be able to play some football. But there's still good football left in Josh Gordon. I mean, he has that size dimension that you would like, you know, for that third receiver. Because what you're looking at is that, you know, as good as Tyler Lockett is with a $17.25 million contract, I mean, he can play the outside, but he's so good in the slot. Is that you still want an outside option. That's why David Moore worked out so well. And you kind of wonder, it's like, you know, would they want to bring Amara Darby back? Because, you know, he got cut and he's on the street right now. But again, it's like the urgency right now to get those extra positions, because again, you're just waiting things out, getting things at the minimum salary, and they've done a good job of doing that. And so you can see that those things can work. But, you know, Darbo's out there, and so we'll see where that goes. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And, of course, you can text us at 710-710 as we continue along here. Again, the Mariners in a good situation right now as far as where they are and how well they've played and how gutsy they've been with their ability to come back and just battle. Ty France, what a great acquisition that was. You know, Ty France comes in. I mean, he got the walk-off home run yesterday. Mitch Haniger coming back has been huge for this team, you know, because he's been one of the leaders and one of the best hitters on this team. And again, they're starting to pick up some of the offense that was really struggling a little bit earlier in the season. That's going well. Good starting pitching. That has worked out real well. And the bullpen's been okay. Not great, but okay. But again, the fact that, you know, they're pretty much in every game with that great chance to come back toward the end and win these games, I think that's really huge for this team. So that's one of the good things that I think you look at and you take over. And, of course, you know, you want to have as good of a baseball season as you can. I mean, I think you can start to look and say right now they're ahead of where anybody thought they were going to be because, you know, you were thinking for a winning season next year was going to be the year. But right now at 9-5, they're showing the potential, particularly against some good teams, of doing well. So overall, I think that's going to be that's going to be good. So coming up, and of course, you can give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. You can also text us at 710-710. And again, everybody's kind of looking right now to see where things are going as far as the draft. I mean, it's really picking up. I mean, you've got you know, a lot of mock drafts that are coming out. And you know, I know it's pretty soon I got to do a two-round mock draft. I know I got to start proposing some trades coming up on this week for the Washington Post. As far as, and of course, you know, naturally I'll be involving the Patriots moving up, Washington moving up, trying to get some of the quarterbacks. And so we'll see where those things go. But overall, I think that this is going to be a fascinating draft, even though it's not a rich draft and not a real great draft. But again, I think that that's the great part about it. So coming up next, we're going to have our weekly dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so we'll do that next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And it's time for our weekly dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so, David, what a great performance this week by the Mariners, and particularly last night with the comebacks, and they've been doing all these different things. What's going on with this team?
A nice start, John, is what's going on with them. I mean, I've always used football metaphors with you, and you know, we're about 5 minutes into the second quarter of the first game, so it's very, very early in terms of making great proclamations about what kind of team this is. But they've shown some very good tendencies, to say the very least, and And the very best one is the ability to come back. I mean, that's huge. They've had an outsized number of their games. I think they've won 9 and have had at least 5 of them, if not 6 of them, with coming in come-from-behind fashion. That is a tremendous, tremendous habit for a team to get into. So it's been a lot of fun to watch them so far.
Really hasn't. The great part about it is that they're doing it against some pretty good teams.
Well, the Orioles aren't very good, John. Yeah. So the Astros are. They've got a bunch of guys out on COVID. And that's kind of the point of really the next, well, the end of this month. I mean, they play the Dodgers twice, the Red Sox, who weren't supposed to be good, but find themselves in first place. Are going to be a challenge, a 4-game series there. Then they'll have Houston for 4 more before I think ending up the month ends up with them playing the Angels. So they'll get a good idea, a better idea of where they stand with some of the better teams. But you know, it's not to take away from anything that they've done so far. It's been you always look for things that are sustainable or not. And 2 years ago, when they went 13-2 with a team full of basically retreads. You knew that it wasn't sustainable. You knew it was just it was a fluke, and it was not going to continue. And in this case, you're not seeing stuff like that. You're seeing young guys who you've been counting on coming up through your system, buttressed by veteran players who have done it before. And Mitch Haniger is the big. Did I say big?
Big
plus to have on this lineup because of his veteran status, and he's doing it all from a very important spot. That's the leadoff position. He's a giant guy to have back as a veteran playing well, and as we said, Kyle Seager's playing very well too. So it's a lot of nice things going on at the start, that's for sure.
And how about Ty France?
He had a nice one last night, that's for sure. I mean, and he's hit him big. Evan White, he really needed one. Evan White last night, he's I know been dealing with a little bit of an injury, but his was good. But Ty France getting the walk offs, and that's the thing. I mean, those refused to lose Mariners of 95, probably had more talent, but they hadn't won. And that's the question that's got to happen. It's true in any sport. You've got to get used to winning. You got to figure out a way to win. And the Mariners have now figured out a way to win, and it's the best possible way, and that their ability has come from behind. And it's been very good to see so far. Ty France has looked good, and we'll see if they can keep it up as the year goes on. But right now, it's a nice start.
How would you assess their starting pitching right now?
Well, Marco Gonzalez had a nice bounce back. Justin Dunn had, it may have been in that doubleheader. Second game may have been one of the best starts the Mariners had this year. So he looked good. Kikuchi had an interesting start last night. It wasn't among his best, though he did look very, very good early. He pitched into the 6th inning, so he looked okay. To me, he still remains, even more so now with Paxton out, a gigantic key moving forward, if in fact they're going to move forward, is him being able to pitch effectively. I'm not worried about Marco Gonzalez. I think that he will he's shown it. He's shown that he can pitch at this level and pitch effectively at this level. And I think he had a couple of rocky starts. Justin Dunn, we don't know about, obviously. We're going to wait and see. What he does. Sheffield, when he comes up, we'll wait and see what he does. It's not necessarily figured out. Kikuchi's a guy to pay him big money to, and understanding that it was going to take a couple of years to get it squared away, this is the year for him to put up. So I'm closely watching him, John, and for the most part, although a little rocky last night, I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm, that's pretty good. And how would you assess the bullpen? Shaky. But...
Well, it's... They've had their moments. Now, look, the Mariners have given up a lot of runs in a lot of games this year, but if we stick with the last week, the bullpen has looked pretty good. I mean, they've got two guys there at the back end that have been okay, for the most part. I like the transition that Graveman is making. He's looking fairly solid back there. I mean, I'd have to say, to be completely fair, you probably have to call it still a work in progress, but... they've got some big arms out there, and that will be one of the keys to whether or not they can sustain their success is if they pitch well in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. But, boy, what a great start to the season. Did you ever expect that this team this year would be sitting there 4 games above 500?
I think about what we saw 4 years ago, and I believe that you got to believe that, yeah. I mean, it shouldn't surprise you. But, you know, the point that I'll make, not trying to throw cold water on everything, is look, this is a really, it's not even a representative part of the season yet. It's the very, very early stages of the season, and it's you're liking what you're seeing. That's the key point to make. You're liking what you're seeing by guys that you're going to be counting on. So it's not guys, you know, I mean, just dovetailing back to that 13-2 start for a second, with Encarnacion playing well, with guys who were hitting during that stretch, those weren't guys that you were expecting to be a part of what you were going to be able to do. You know, these guys are. So it's a very, very encouraging start, but I'm going to leave it at that. That's what it is, an encouraging start.
Okay, well, switching to football right now, Seahawks made an interesting move this week in getting Aldon Smith, signing him to a one-year deal at the minimum salary plus signing bonus. Now they have seven defensive ends, including about, what, five defensive ends that have, you know, at least last year, more than four sacks. And you go back to the previous year, Rasheen Green led the team with four sacks. So it looks like they've now pretty much, talent-wise, fixed the pass rush.
Yeah, it sure does. And put it in play to be what it went. And we're not even talking about the guy who led him in sacks last year, are we?
No, because, I mean, Carlos Dunlap looked great.
He did.
Oh, you're talking about Jamal Adams with his 9.5
sacks. That's what I was talking about. What I was talking about. I mean, you know, you still got, and I don't know what you think, John, because I had the guys ask me during the week, but I don't think they're going to walk away from the strategy of Jamal Adams rushing the quarterback the way he does. I think that's here to stay, and it's here to stay with this team. So, you know, what they've got a chance to have is a ferocious pass rusher, including Adams, that really doesn't give teams any time to make any decisions. And, you know, we've seen how well in the past, quite obviously, a rotation at defensive end worked when you had veteran players there. It was just fantastic during the 13 and 14 Super Bowl runs. And they have got enough guys there to be able to put something like that in play this year, I think. So, yeah, I think from that standpoint, it's been a very successful offseason.
Yeah, well, what I wonder about now is that so they got seven defensive ends, and normally you like to keep 10 defensive players on defensive linemen on the team. Are they going to go to 11, or do they, you know, what guy could be expendable from the seven that they have at defensive end?
Or maybe what guy on the group from defensive end can the pinch play defensive tackle?
The former first round pick, you know, Collier can maybe make that move.
That's a good point.
I mean, that could be one option there.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But you know, that would be the other option if they felt like a Collier or one of their guys.
OJ Collins,
would be able to play in the inside on occasion. Then they might be able to keep that many defensive ends. But that's a question for training camp. They are going to have training camp, right, John?
Yes. Training camp is on right now. At this stage, no OTAs, and the Seahawks were the second team to opt out of going to the OTAs. They're going to boycott. What's your feeling about right now? There's 15 teams that have players saying that they're not going to go to the any of the OTAs, and particularly the OTAs where you're going to be on the field. They're all going to miss that. But still, you have teams like Kansas City that have a lot of players with signing with workout bonuses. Mm-hmm. You have the Green Bay Packers who lead the league in the number of guys with big workout bonuses. Looks like they're going to show up. So that creates a little bit of a competitive disadvantage.
Well, you know, that was, I thought, the interesting point to make about it, too, was it's beyond just that one team. You've got plenty of guys who've got bonuses in there for showing up for off-season workouts. So I'm going to be very curious to see how that's going to wind up figuring, because it's one of the many things that they'll have to figure out as they're moving forward on that. I think that's a good question, though. I mean, I don't have an answer for you. I don't know how they're going to figure it out.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's like right now, this like full speed steam ahead as far as the NFL. But again, it's like, you know, the Cowboys, I know, had a Zoom meeting the other day with the players. They've not come out with their decision of what they're going to do. But it's weird. But right now, I think the Cowboys lead the NFL with players in the facility right now getting treatment. It's like 25. But I know J.C. Treanor kind of tipped this off. He's the head of the union. Is that is a bunch of the players have COVID-19. I don't know about Dallas, but again, he says there's a bunch of guys that have been going into the facility and they've got the virus.
Yeah, it's not going to be, well, I mean, it's, who can speculate on what it's going to be like in September. I mean, yeah. You get the feeling that it will be better and it won't be that big a deal, but tell it to the guys who are dealing with it now, right? So, you know, it'll have to play it by ear a little bit, but I would think that it looks like things will be tamped down to a point where when it comes to that, they'll be able to do their thing and get ready for the 17-week season.
I know. And that's the thing that's, I think, so interesting about what the Seahawks have done at defensive end is that, you know, now it goes back to that 2013-2014 model where it's like you don't want to have too many more guys on the defensive line play more than 50% of the downs.
Well, that's an in general thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's having good depth. So, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing at all if it works out that way for most teams. But, you know, we shall see. The NFL's a long summer is yet to begin, but the draft will get it going and it'll get people feeling NFL again.
Yeah. How do you think John Snyder is going to handle this? He's got three draft choices right now. 56 is the first pick. Do you think he trades down?
You know, we've watched him for how many years now, and I mean, he's never gone into a draft without adding to his total. And I was thinking, you know, out loud last week, if there's ever a year for him to maybe not do it, it might be this year where you've had the least amount of college football games played that anyone can recall, maybe, you know, the least amount of access to players that you've had that anyone has seen. So, I mean, for that reason, if there was to be a year, John, if there was to be a year where the Seahawks did not drop down and accumulate draft picks, it would be this year.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I'm not so certain that that'll be the case, but it would be this year.
No question about it. So what's on the agenda for the Groz this weekend?
Oh, man, beautiful weather and seeing if the Mariners can keep up that first-place groove.
Have you been able to make it over to T-Mobile?
No, I have not yet, but I'm hoping to do so fairly soon. I think it's still opened up for about 9,500, 9,800 fans, and the Mariners have found their way to having sellouts again because they're tough to come by.
I can imagine. Well, of course, enjoy yourself on this nice, sunny, warm weekend. And, of course, that's our daily dose, weekly dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. David, have yourself a great weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. You can text us at 710-710. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave.
Hey, what's up, John Clayton?
How we doing?
Man, it's great to be back on the John Clayton Show on 710 Cairo, home of the three-card Monty, Seattle Seahawks, and the AL West up for the next two games before you get pounded into the turf of T-Mobile Park next week when the Dodgers come to town. Shout out to Matt the MC Nelson for getting me on the air so I can bring it to the show. And while I'm giving shout outs, John Clayton, let me give one to the Sports Bar Network with members like Timeout L House and Federal Way. And right off the bat, John Clayton, let me help you with a little housekeeping on Mike and Renton's call about Pat Calabro, a.k.a. Kevin Calabro.
Kevin Calabro, right.
Legendary voice of the Sonics and former voice of the Portland Trail Blazers. You know, he stepped down.
Oh, did he step down? Okay.
Yep, and is probably in Lake Chelan sipping a mimosa, smoking a cigar, and teeing off at Bear Creek Golf Course as we speak. And speaking of teeing off, John Clayton, last night watching the Los Angeles Dodgers playing the Padres in San Diego, I thought about the caller last week who's justifiably still teed off about the Chargers moving to L.A. and was pleading with you to do something like he was Bonacera and you were Don Corleone. But it just hit me what a shame that move was. I didn't like it at the time, but last night it reiterated to me watching fans in San Diego rooting so hard against the team from L.A. where their football team now resides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, the big thing is the reason that it can't be changed is that they have so much language in the contract that makes it so difficult that, you know, technically, even though Spanos's daughter is suing to have him sell the team, but if you sell it before a certain amount of time, then all of a sudden you get heavy fines and everything else. And it's the legal mess. But I agree that the fact I didn't like the move either. But the reason that Dean Spanos moved was because they were getting absolutely nothing from the city of San Diego as far as a stadium. And the stadium kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, you know, that public-private partnership thing always goes sideways, and it's always slanted towards the private side anyway, and so the public really doesn't have any business being in it. And we've gone around and round and round with that here in Seattle, of course, and so we know that up close and personal. Moving to the Seahawks, John Clayton, they picked up in free agency cornerback Akello Witherspoon from San Francisco and let Shaquille Griffin go to Jacksonville and Quentin Dunbar to Detroit. In order, John Clayton, who got the best of those moves in your estimation?
Well, I mean, I would have to think that you have to look at probably Detroit and, you know, certainly Jacksonville getting the best because say what you want. I know it's $9 million less than what they had to pay Witherspoon. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that meant so much to this team for a long period of time, has been to the Pro Bowl. He was, you know, the first or second cornerback in this year's free agent class. And so you look positively at that. And then you also look at the fact that Dunbar, despite his injuries, you know, is a pretty good player. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, Demarius Randall can help out a little bit. But, I mean, Dunbar is good enough to start. And so to lose him, and again, you kind of, because you know as a former defensive back, okay, let's say, for example, you know, you didn't want to go back into your locker room. You'd rather go to a different locker room if you're going to come in and have to say, I accepted the minimum salary. There's a little bit of that. And then maybe there's some concerns about his knee and some of the injury history that he's had.
So you're going Detroit 1, Jacksonville 2, and then...
Well, I mean, obviously, Shaquille Griffin is better, I think, than Dunbar. So I'd go 1, Jacksonville, 2, Detroit, and then 3, Seattle.
Wow. Who are your top corners in the draft, John Clayton?
Top corners, Patrick Surtain. Have him going to the Dallas Cowboys. Next, and I guess this could be a little debatable, but I have J.C. Horn from South Carolina, who opted out last year. I have him number two. And then you know, number three, looking down my list, I have Greg, Newsom, number three. But I think that I have the one that's dropping is, you know, Caleb Farley because of the problems that he had in his back.
How about your top safeties, John Clayton? Who you got there?
I only have one in the first round. and again, it's a very bad safety draft. And so I actually have Trevon Mooring from TCU going to Jacksonville at 25. Oh, and I better run here, so... Commando, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, my best, Mrs. Clayton. Talk to you, John Clayton.
All right, thank you. Coming up next, Seattle Sports Saturday. Thank you, everybody. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.